Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's May 20th, 2014. We've got a lot of topics to cover tonight. We did a special IPA blind tasting. We're going to give the results on this show. We've got some distilled spirits with New Holland Brewery from Michigan. And we'll be joined by an author of Southern Craft Beers from Southern Living. All right, so it's Jimmy Carboni. Jimmy's number 43 in the Good Beer Seal. We've got a special show today. Allie from Green Flash, how are you?
Hey, Jimmy. What's going on?
It's great to see you on the show. Drew, you're a BJCP judge and a home brewer. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And Rich Blair from New Holland Brewing. We're going to talk a little later about distilled beers.
Yep.
So indeed. Welcome to the show, everybody. And I think, is that Whitney?
It's Whitney.
And okay, she's off here. But Whitney is she's a writer from Southern Living. So we got a lot to talk about on this show. I think the first thing we're talking about is blind tasting and IPAs, and I think everybody can join in on that. Later we're going to be joined. We will announce that in the second segment the winner of our IPA blind tasting. And let's talk about why we did that. Ale Street News, good buddies of ours, they every issue they do a blind tasting panel, and Paul Sullivan is a great writer. He's a home brewer. He organizes that. So this year we decided let's start doing an annual Beer Sessions Radio blind tasting. This one was commercially available IPAs in New York. And the parameters were we sat with some Cicerone certified guys like James Ty, and Ross Shepherd from Sam Adams was there as well. And we had Michael. It's Michael Cafaro and Drew Nichols. They're both from the New York City Homebrew Guild. And you guys are, you know, what do you guys recognize judges? So tell us a little bit about the blind tasting process. You have the BJCP, you know, style. Tell us about that and some differences from Cicerone to give our listeners a little background if they've never done a blind tasting. Like, what are you guys looking for? What do you judge on?
So the BJCP breaks beers down into, you know, a couple different categories to try and make it a little less subjective. So, you know, it just gives you really well-defined criteria to kind of compare one beer against another. So you generally start off, you're talking about the aroma, the appearance, the flavor, the body, any off flavors that might occur in the beer. And by breaking it down really specifically like that, it makes it easier to give each subject its own sub-score. And then you can add them all up, and you have a nice numerical number for each beer.
So the BJCP, that means Beer Judge Certification Program, right?
Right.
So that's become really popular. I know at Jimmy's number 43, we host an annual class.
I took my entire, like, it's almost like a six-month course. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I took the whole thing, and yeah, I got to throw props at Jimmy's 43 for letting us take that space that whole time.
No, we love having you, but it's also been a phenomenon. I mean, it's also like people are talking about the building blocks of the craft beer scene. Well, you know, it seems like you need homebrewers, and homebrewers need to have these competitions, you know, regional and local as well as national, but you need the judges.
Right. Yeah. So, and there is sort of a shortage of judges because, you know, this is all just people who are in it for the love. You know, you're not paid. You know, I spent all this time getting certified and, you know, oh, hey, I'm going up here this weekend to, you know, go judge these. My family's like, oh, you're a certified judge now. How much do you make? And you're like, well, you get a drink free beer with your buddies for a weekend, you know?
Well, you also have to work. I mean, you guys are seriously, like, every beer you're looking at, like, aroma, appearance, taste, overall.
You take it seriously, and after you've been doing it for a while, you know, it kind of becomes a little bit rote, and, you know, there is a method to the madness, and I think that's the whole idea, just to, you know, so you really can compare.
What's that? So, Rich Blair from New Holland, you flew out, you're in New York City. Have you ever been part of any blind tasting events?
Nothing that was really well organized. We have done, I have taken part in some that were just for fun. I know the Michigan Brewers Guild, they have conferences every January, and they had a blind IPA tasting, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, that I did take part in. And it was fun. It was a really good time kind of sitting down, and we were trying to name these beers with the list. So we're trying to guess which one was Bell's Two Hearted and which one was Mad Hatter from us. And I'm happy to say I got 6 of 7 correct, nice. Which was very surprising, especially being that I'm a spirits guy. But yeah, I have taken part in something like that was a little bit less organized, not BJCP for sure. But yeah, really good time.
Well, we asked, I mean, ours was a pretty simple idea. We asked some of the reps that we knew in New York City representing, you know, commercially available IPAs. So we had Lagunitas, we had Green Flash West Coast IPA, Bell's Two Hearted, Stone IPA. Locally, we had Gun Hill, which was new, and a few others, 6 Point Broad and a Resin. In total, we had about 11 IPAs that were considered standard IPAs. And, you know, Ali, so you're here from Green Flash. Tell us what this experience meant to you. I mean, I know you submitted the West Coast IPA.
It's actually interesting that we've got somebody here from Michigan. We actually just launched out there in October of last year, and I kind of troll the message boards. I love to see what people have to say about my beer as they're trying it for the first time. And there was a casual, I think it was 5 or 6 guys who picked, you know, a couple of what they considered top-end IPAs that were available in Michigan. And they did a blind tasting together, and they kind of put in line, okay, well, I think this is what they are, and this is where I ranked them. And sure enough, they Green Flash ended up coming up on top for both of them. And it was actually really exciting to see that happen in Michigan, where Michigan loves Michigan beer more than anybody does in the entire world. but, you know, I think it's great to have blind tastings. I mean, I say it all the time. I'll do the Pepsi test any day with West Coast. And we all stand, you know, behind our beer 110%.
What's the Pepsi test?
Oh, you know the Pepsi test.
Come on, tell us about it.
You know.
I don't drink Pepsi.
Well, no, because you picked Coke. but, you know, I think it's a really great time for people to go out there and, you know, try the local IPAs versus, you know, the national release IPAs and kind of see where their palate lands, especially considering where their perception might be and, you know, make sure everything's in line.
All right. Drew, you've done a number of blind tastings, right?
Oh, yeah.
And what typically comes up? Like, give us some anecdotes, challenges. I mean, you think it's going to be lively, but you guys are kind of serious and quiet.
Yeah, it's very somber. It's very quiet. One of the last judges I was doing, this beer came across, and one of the challenges is trying to define the off flavors, especially for home brewers, because, you know, there's so much science involved in brewing now. You know, for the repeatability is very important for a brand. And, you know, most beers you drink, they have a brand name. And you expect something when you open that bottle. And I don't think people fully appreciate how alive a beer is. You know, it's a live product. It's made from agricultural products. It's made from flowers. It's made from grain. When I say flowers, I literally mean hops are a flower. And, you know, that's a very perishable item. And so these beers change a lot with time. And, you know, the yeast are fickle little bitches. And, when homebrewers don't always have the science and the technology and the microscopes.
What did you say, Drew?
I said they're fickle little bitches. so homebrewers quite often.
What are you, Southern?
They don't quite have.
I think we have a Southern theme to the show, too, coming up.
Yeah, we do. It's hard to get the yeast right. And so for homebrewers especially, they can get a lot of off flavors in their beer. And I think a lot of homebrewers and a lot of people who aspire to become BJCP judges, it's for that knowledge of the off flavors. Because there's so many weird little chemicals that yeast can spit out when it gets pissed off. And each one of those things has a different off flavor. And if you can recognize what that flavor is, then you can recognize what the mistake was in the process.
So you're saying particularly when you're judging homebrew, there's certain things you look for.
Right.
Because we know that some of the other guys at our event were Cicerone certified. And I think they have a different background. I think they're used to dealing with.
Well, people don't just submit beers to contests for a ribbon. Quite often, they're also looking for feedback. You know, they'll know this isn't as good as Green Flash's IPA. Why is that? Help me out. And I think that's a big part of being a BJCP judge. And that's a big part of the feedback process.
Allie, did you bring any beers?
I did bring some beers.
What'd you bring?
Well, I don't know if you've heard yet, but we recently reformulated our West Coast IPA and our Hophead Red recipes. So I thought it would be fun to share them with you guys.
Let's go for it. Let's pour it out.
We kind of
Drew, as our designated homebrew guy, you got to pour. And tell us about it, Allie.
So basically, we're going to start with the Hophead Red here. That was a 7%. We've added more dry hopping to it. And we've kind of gotten it back up to the 8.1% double IPA level. really didn't change too much more to the recipe. So it's still the same caramelly, and you get the nice dry hopping from the Amarillo on there. So it's still the same creamy mouthfeel, same flavor profile that you came to expect from Hophead Red, but we kind of amped it up a little bit. Cheers.
But don't you guys also have a new session IPA series coming out too? No? You're not doing session IPAs?
We make a hoppy pale ale called 30th Street. We've been doing it for a long time.
You're bucking the trends because everybody else is doing session IPAs. What do you guys think about session IPAs? Are you tired of them? Would you rather just have like a good hoppy IPA?
I love session IPAs. I mean, some people just call them pale ales. But
right. I'm in the same boat. I feel like we need more of those beers. We need more beers that are a little bit lower in alcohol. You can drink them throughout the day rather than just have a couple and, you know, knock you off your stool. I think that the world needs more of these kinds of beers, and that's certainly not to say anything about these really big, high ABV beers. They're, you know, beautiful as well, but some small beers are really needed, and it's fun to see people going in that direction.
Well, you know, that's bringing us to another theme that we'll talk about tonight. Whitney is Whitney Wright writes for Southern Living Magazine. You recently did a survey of your favorite breweries in each southern state.
We did.
And yeah, it's quite a list. So do you want to read them out, or should I read them out for you?
I don't have the whole. Do you have the whole list?
I mean, you covered I'll test you, but first the thing is, southern craft breweries. To many of us, we're not used to hearing that, and that's another thing we'll talk about tonight.
Yeah.
But of these, we got Alabama, Arkansas, you know, Georgia, Florida, Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, North Carolina, Oklahoma. Is that southern?
Right. Yeah, close enough.
South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Virginia, West Virginia. What's your favorite southern IPA?
It's not really.
Just pick
fair.
One, Whitney. We'll talk to you more
you
about
it. You know, I'm actually, so I just moved down to Birmingham from New York City about a year ago. And there's a great brewery there called Good People. And their IPA is actually one of my favorites, and it's where we hang out on the weekends and kind of just, you know, what I drink when I don't want to think very hard, because it's always good, it's consistent. They do a nice job there. So, but yeah, the other reason I really like it, and this is one thing that I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit this in this room, but until about a year ago, I was kind of a vodka club soda kind of a girl. I think, yeah.
You're the target market.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, we all start somewhere.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So you're saying you'd have to move to a southern town, live next to a little brewery, and then you start liking beer?
Well, that's kind of what happened to us. And more than anything, in Birmingham, just the year that I've been there, you know, these breweries have really become kind of community centers in the towns, which I think is not uncommon. They've just done a wonderful job in kind of reviving some areas of the city that have needed it. And, so more than anything, they've just turned out to be these really wonderful things for our community that I think is really why I started going there and started hanging out and started drinking the beer. So
oh, that's great. We have a lot to talk about on the show. Allie, tell us about San Diego and, you know, Green Flash, because it's a pretty cool group over there too.
Oh, it's fantastic. I think, Mike and Lisa have been on the show before, our owners. And I know Chuck Silva's been on with you once or twice. And kind of where these new recipes came from is that's, you know, Chuck, Mike, and Lisa constantly evolving to keep Green Flash current and relevant and making sure that we're putting out the best possible product available. And that's where, you know, we get this tweak with the Hophead Red. And, you know, we're going to be opening up the new
like
bomber on the West
Red
Coast.
At 8%,
yeah.
I like it.
It's great.
Yeah. May I have more, please?
Yes, you may.
So catch you on, for our listeners, you know, there's always different guests. I know there's a lot of newcomers on the show, but they have to realize that, first of all, they actually bring beer to the show. Second of all, they have to pour it. And the third part is later today we're gonna try some spirits from New Holland, which is a whole other trend that's going on. But, Whitney, I want to talk to you a little more about you, because you reached out to us So Southern Living. So you guys, suddenly the South has all these great breweries. Every state now, like Mississippi,
every
Alabama.
Every state now, yeah. The fastest growing craft brewing region in the country. Alabama, I'm proud to say, is the fastest growing state. So I feel like every time I turn around, there's, you know, I get a lot of, I'm a writer, so I get a lot of pitches across my desk. But I have to say the best packages that I get are full of beer. And those are fun to try. And it's just amazing. Every week.
Is it okay if I tell you the breweries I want to try and maybe you can help me get some of the beers?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, Texas, Jester King. I've never had Jester King. I always wanted it.
Yeah.
Drew, have you had Jester King before?
No, I haven't had it.
I've read about it in Beer Advocate.
I'll be honest with you, I haven't had that, but that is one of our executive editor, Hunter Lewis, so that is one of his favorite key picks.
So now we're going to invite you back in a month.
Okay.
Maybe or two, and you'll come back with some of these. The other one is I've had Westbrook from South Carolina, which I like. Is this the Coast Kolsch?
Yes. You bring that? Yes.
That's great. So we're going to taste that next. That's pretty awesome. And Oklahoma, I know they've been in the city, but I've never had Prairie Artisan. You haven't either.
No, I can't drink them all myself.
You're just learning. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good. And then Florida, we all know Cigar City High
a
lot.
Yeah.
And what's another one?
Tennessee. Have you had the Wiseacre?
No.
Tiny Bum beer? No. I love this beer. It's great for, like, we've all established I'm a beginner, but it's great. It's got a little bit of honey in it. I mean, it's just a perfect starter beer. And also, like I was talking about before, they just have a great story behind their brewery. And if you've seen, I think there's a can here. Have you seen the cans?
No, we'll open that in the next session.
Yeah,
one more thing. So, Whitney, you were a chef. You worked at Per Se in New York?
Yeah, I did. It was kind of the worst year of my life, but...
But now you're ready for Southern Living.
Yeah.
So what's up with Southern Living? Are you guys really interested in beer now?
You know, we are. It's I mean, I think everybody knows there's been tons of interesting stuff going on in food and drink in the South in the last decade, and it's really been a privilege to move down there and be a part of kind of all these artisans that are sprouting up. And the best thing about it is in the South, these people have this really – they're so dedicated to storytelling. And so, like I was saying – not only do I get these packages of beers, but I get these long handwritten letters from these brewers about why they started doing it and what made them do it and why they keep doing it and how they're naming their beers and all these just great stories. So it's a very storied region, and I think the beers there are the same way.
So what's your email so everybody can send you more beer?
You can whitney.wright@timeinc.com anytime.
Brewery reps across the country. Southern Living is covering craft beer. All right, so we're going to take a short break. We'll be back, and we're going to talk about the winner of the IPA Blind Tasting Competition on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, yeah.
Child, in the morning I'm gone, because 12 hours here, 12 hours too long.
So you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, greatbrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. Greatbrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, greatbrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education. Visit greatbrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the heritageradionetwork.org. We have so much fun at Heritage Radio Network. We're here at Roberta's in Bushwick. This weekend we did the Judgment of Brooklyn. Everybody's doing such great things. Patrick Martin's our founder. His new book's coming out, Carnivore is Something, Dilemma or Something. And we're going to have him on June 3rd, which is going to be our meat and beer show, which is going to be pretty cool. And we have the owner of St. Fulian Brewery in Belgium coming on. We're going to be like, Belgian beer, heritage foods. It's going to be an awesome show. So a lot of great things going on here. HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Okay, the show tonight, we were talking about, in particular, our IPA blind tasting. Last month, we assembled a group of certified Cicerones and New York City Homebrew BJCP judges. And we judged many of the commercially available IPAs in New York City. And we're going to announce the winners right now. And first and third place amongst the 11 IPAs was the Green Flash West Coast IPA.
Holla.
All right. And Allie's here. Second place, a surprise because they're kind of new, was the Two Roads IPA made by Phil Markowski in Connecticut. And the first place IPA, you guys can do the drum roll on this because this is from certified BJCP and certified Cicerone judges in New York City. The first Beer Sessions Radio annual blind tasting this year was IPA. The winner was Stone IPA. And cheers to everybody. And I know we've got Mitch Steele, the brewmaster, on the air. It just happens that he's written a book with the Brewers Association about IPAs. So, Mitch, welcome to the show, and congratulations. What's great about blind tastings is that we really didn't know it was your beer until it was revealed. But tell us a little bit more about the Stone IPA and why it's so great and so classic.
Oh, yeah, thanks a lot. You know, Stone IPA, we've been brewing it for a lot of years now. I mean, I think it was the third beer, maybe the fourth beer that we ever came out with at Stone. You know, it's kind of a classic American IPA at this point, and the overriding hop character on this is coming from a hop called Centennial, which we absolutely love here at Stone. And it's just a nice citrusy lemony type hop character, you know. And it's definitely our best selling beer. You know, it is really growing like crazy, and it's definitely a team favorite. We just love it ourselves as well. So this is a real nice honor.
Well, you know, and Drew's one of the judges is here. He's a New York City homebrew judge, from a BJCP judge. So you know, they judge on style. So is it that did Stone write the style definition for IPA, or it just happens that, you know, or do the style definitions influence the way you make a beer when you're doing this?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. I don't think we've ever developed a beer based on style definitions. You know, we just kind of like to put things together and see if it comes out good, and then we figure out a style later. You know, so we don't approach any of our beers that way, you know, as far as, you know, trying to brew to style specifically. That doesn't mean we don't brew to style, but, you know, that's not our main focus. We're more interested in what ingredients can really bring out something interesting in the beer.
With
Stone IPA, I think it just fits. You know, we took a lot of inspiration from some of the IPA brewers here in the San Diego area when we were putting that together. You know, Steve Wagner was the original brewmaster of Stone Brewing Company. He's one of our owners, and he put this recipe together initially. And you know, he talked a lot with the folks at Pizza Port and with Vinny, who was up at Blind Pig up in Temecula at the time. And you know, so you know, we and that's how everybody brews. We all talk to each other and we all get inspirations from each other, and that's kind of how Stone IPA came about.
But then you've done so many offshoots. You have Stone Ruination. And how are the other Stone IPAs different than the basic Stone IPA?
Yeah, well, you know, Ruination is our double IPA, and it's got very similar ingredients to Stone IPA, except it's 8.2% alcohol, and we doubled the hopping, the late hopping and the dry hopping on that. So even though it's a Centennial based beer, with the higher alcohol and the higher hopping rates, the hops come across a lot different. They come across as piney and resiny as opposed to lemony, like you get in Stone IPA. And we've got a lot of other IPAs as well. We've got we just came out with a session IPA that we're calling Stone Go To IPA, and that's that uses Mosaic and Citra hops and the dry hop.
Yeah, that's a little more citrusy.
Yeah, it's really citrusy, and it's got some dankness as well. You know, the Mosaic's got all sorts of neat flavors going on in it, you know, and a brand new hop variety that we're really excited
about. Mitch, slow down for 1 second. So Drew, who's one of the judges, Drew, tell me some of the things that you were thinking when you judged, and what about the Stone IPA that?
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, once we got down to the final three, it was really almost pulling hairs. You know, they were all just delicious, wonderful beers. But you know, I just have to say, Mitch, I'm a total fan. I got to meet you at the National Homebrew Conference last year, and I read your book. I love your book, and if I have a beer hero, you're he.
And then also,
thank you.
Allie's here. She's the Green Flash rep in New York. Allie, tell us a little about how Green Flash West Coast IPA might differ from the Stone IPA.
I think the West Coast IPA definitely has a little bit more of a citrus power to it. And then, you know, and as far as, you know, your West Coast IPAs go, they are a little bit more forward and in your face. You know, and I love the Stone IPA. It's I think a little bit mellower than what our West Coast IPA is.
When we got down to the final three, what we did was we tried to do in the BJCP, quite often you'll have so many beers of one style, you'll end up having multiple judges and tables judging different beers, and they'll all have their favorite. And to kind of, you know, recognize that, quite often at the end of the competition, you'll do what they call a mini best of show. and every table basically say, listen, this was the best one we had. You got it. Everyone has to taste this. And so that's what we do. And that's kind of how we ran this judging. And at the end, out of the 11, we took our favorite six and, just off the cuff, right next to each other, all at once. We're tasting them all at the same time. And it's really more of a round of elimination. And the first three fall off pretty fast. But when we got to the last three, I think one of the things that really that kind of pushed Stone over the edge was its intensity. You know, it almost has a double IPA intensity, but it's not. It really is. I think it really does truly fit in the IPA category.
Well, one thing, Mitch, that I like about this kind of blind tasting is that for years I'd never bought your Stone IPA at my East Village bar, Jimmy's Number 43. I was always buying the Stone Ruination and of course the Enjoy By, which is this whole other thing. Tell us about the Enjoy By IPA.
Yeah, that's a beer we came out with almost 2 years ago now, and we've been brewing it on a periodic basis. It's a really interesting project. You know, the whole point of this beer, besides just making a beer that we think is great, is to have a beer out there that demonstrates the need to drink IPAs fresh. And it's something that is really, really been frustrating for us as brewers for a long time, is that people will take our IPAs and especially like our anniversary IPAs and age them. And that's not what we want them to be drinking, is, because the hop character just really falls off in an IPA very quickly. And so we thought we'd put something out that really kind of drove that message to an extreme level. And, so this beer, it's released. It's got a very definite date that we want it off the shelves. And we work very closely with our wholesalers and the people that sell the beer, the retailers, the bars, and everything else, so that they know when they're going to get the beer, they know when it needs to be gone, and then they can approach their sales strategy that way. And it's been a huge hit for us, and it's exceeded our expectations quite a bit. And I love the beer. It's totally different than any other IPA we brew.
Yeah, no, I think it's cool. I mean, I like that you have the Enjoy By date, and I think that's what people want. And then we've also got Rich here from New Holland. Rich, how would West Coast IPAs differ from what you guys are making at New Holland or in Michigan?
Excuse me. Well, that's one of the things that's really great about the regionality of craft beer, is when you drink an IPA from Southern California, or, it's hard to have this conversation and not mention, the people at Sierra Nevada and Chico as well. But when you drink IPA from that region of the country, it has a signature. And it's Centennial hops, which, Mitch mentioned a few minutes ago. It really drives what, seems to be coming from the West Coast. And it is big and aggressive. And it challenges, the rest of us from around the country to make beer that can stand up to that. And I think we've really responded to that in Michigan. And we use a lot of Centennial as well. There are a couple of hop farms that have popped up in the last few years that are making really good things. So in Michigan, it's a little bit more balanced. The malt shows a little more. I'm painting with a really broad brush here because we are inspired by the people on the West Coast. But in Michigan, you're going to be a little bit more malty, a little bit more in balance. It's not quite as aggressive. We're getting some different citrus that's coming out as well, more like orange marmalade and kind of going away from the grapefruit. So
in our blind tasting, we have Bell's Too Hard. So, and Maggie, who's one of our co-producers, she'll be tweeting all night. And for the next 2 hours, all the different IPAs that we did taste at the blind tasting, because she's the only one that knows now. But and Mitch, one last thing. So you've got the upcoming Brewers publication, IPA Brewing Techniques, Recipes, and the Evolution of the IPA. Would you like to say a few things about that?
Yeah, it took me several years to put this together, but it's I got sucked into the history of IPA brewing back in England and found out through my research that a lot of the assumptions and a lot of the stories that were being told about the origins of the IPA really have no basis in fact, and they might be myths. And the whole idea that IPA was invented specifically for shipping to India appears to be a false assumption. It appears that it was just a beer that the Hodgson Brewery was brewing, and it survived the trip very well because of the way it was brewed, and it took off from there. So I've got the book. About half of the book is about the history of IPA from the 1700s through about the 1970s. And then the rest of the book deals with brewing kind of craft style IPAs and how people have done that over time. And I've got close to 50 recipes in there that I've gotten from brewers all over the country and all over the world, actually. And you know, it's been a fun project.
Mitch, after I read your book, I always had a question. You talked about how those beers would be aged for an entire year in barrels, and how the wood was, you know, very specifically steamed to really try and remove the woodiness of it. How successful do you think that was, that process?
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to a beer historian. He was out here last week. His name is Ron Pattinson, and he's an English guy who lives in Amsterdam and writes a blog called Shut Up About Barclay Perkins. And I asked him that very same question, and he said that the steaming and also the type of oak that they used, which came from the Baltic and had very tight pores in the wood, so it didn't contribute a lot of flavor. And the idea, they would also, the brewers would also put things like stouts and porters in the barrels first, and then they'd reuse them for IPAs later after any wood character was totally gone from the barrel.
Almost like a neutral wine barrel.
You know, Mitch, exactly. I just read about that. We had Ron here last month or 2 months ago, and I follow him as well. So he's a great reference. Did you make a beer with him, or did you make a historical style beer?
We did. It was just this past Thursday. We went down to our 10-barrel brewery in San Diego at a location called Liberty Station, and we brewed a batch of East India Porter from his recent book, The Home Brewer's Guide to Vintage Beer. And we pulled the recipe out of that, and he was out, and we spent the day brewing a batch of beer. It was great fun.
No, he was amazing. We met him, too. And it's funny. Yeah, he said that it was the East India Porter. That's what the soldiers were drinking in India, right?
And he said
that the IPA was for the officers.
That's another one of those myths that was kind of debunked as I went through the research on this, is that there was plenty of porter that was being successfully shipped to India. It survived the trip just fine. So, you know, it's kind of neat to find all this stuff out.
I think that actually that probably the voyage actually made some of those beers better. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we know recently we've had like Hitachino from Japan used to come, you know, in kegs by ship to New York, and recently the import has been sent in tankers, and they've been actually kegging it in Connecticut, and the beer is totally different, and I actually liked it better when it was sent by ship. But
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it's you know, the ship voyage. One thing that wasn't a myth, it appears to have a lot of basis in fact, is the ship voyage changed the beer. There's no doubt about that.
Well, that's great. Mitch, you know, it's so great having you on. And I know right now, are you guys having your annual stone picnic or company picnic or something?
We had our team-wide company picnic on Sunday, yeah. And then we've got our anniversary party is happening in August.
Well, you guys are great. I was really impressed. And I'll tell you again, one thing that's funny is that with all the hype about, you know, all these different IPAs, I've actually never had your Stone IPA on draft until we did the blind tasting, and
really?
I was only getting the Enjoy By, the Ruination, because I was always like, oh yeah, we just don't want their regular IPA, and now I was like, you know what, it really is classic and it represents something, and really appreciate it. You guys did a great job.
Well, so, thank you very much.
Congratulations.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and we'll do every year. We'll do a different, you know, different category of blind tasting. But I learned a lot from it too, because I actually got to sit with the BJCP judges and cicerones, and it's you know, something.
Yeah,
good.
It's hard to judge beer, isn't it? I mean, listening
is.
To
it
you
is.
Know how the process of elimination works. And I judge at GABF every year,
especially
and
as it gets later
World
in the day.
Beer Cup. It's hard.
Yeah. Hey, so I guess you're lucky to win. Is that what you're saying?
Hey, Mitch, I had a technical brewing question for you. Earlier we were talking about session IPAs, and in a ton of recipes I've seen, guys include both raw sugar and carapils. And to me, it just seemed really counterintuitive. It's like, why not just leave it at pale ale? It's like you're adding the carapils to get rid of the simple sugars, and then you're adding the simple sugars back in with the raw sugar. And I've heard some guys say that, you know, maybe just an extra 5% of dextrose in your grist might kind of like really spruce up the attenuation of the yeast. Is that true? Does the attenuation go beyond what the new sugar profile is just by an extra 5%?
Wow, that's a crazy question. To me, it seems counterintuitive as well. You know, why would you add sugar and dextrin malt to a recipe? You know, they kind of counteract each other and balance each other out. I don't know.
Do you do that in any of your beers?
What's that?
Do you do that in any of your beers, have both carrot pills and sugar?
No, we don't. We either we use sugar in a couple of beers, but typically that's been like double IPA categories, you know, type beers to get them to really dry out so the hops really shine. So I, that's a tough one. I don't know if I can answer that.
Wow. All right, we stumped Mitch Steele. That's pretty good.
Hey, I have myself on the back.
Mitch, thanks so much, and really congratulations. It was a true win. The blind tasting panel picked Stone IPA as the number one commercially available IPA in New York. So congratulations,
Thank you
Mitch.
Very much. That's really great.
All right, have a great day. And guys, we're going to take a short break. Back in a few minutes again on Beer Assassins Radio. All right.
To the preacher, said I'm a medicine. Still didn't mean the fear of God, but all he was a man, and I'm going down. Yeah, I'm going down. Yeah, I did it then. Lord knows I'd do it again. I'm going down. So I went to my sister, saw what he had done. Left without saying, you know what I cried.
Hey, welcome back.
I got you back.
To Beer Sessions Radio. It's a lively studio here. We got all these crazy places. New Holland, Michigan. We got Southern Living. We got Homebrewers from Long Island. And we got Allie from Green Flash. All right. Allie? So I'm drinking the – you guys have new labels too, don't you? The West
we
Coast
do.
IPA.
We just had a new label line put in about a month ago. And we ordered one for the Virginia Beach location. We're probably about a year out on that still. Some actually pretty cool news that we really haven't been too public about yet is we're actually working on a barrel aging room in a restaurant that's going to be in downtown San Diego. And what this really means for us here in New York is Silva Stout will be coming our way eventually, which is really exciting.
Wow.
So that's our double stout aged in bourbon barrels for 18 months, and then we blend it. So it's
so
really
at our blind IPA blind tasting for Beer Sessions Radio, two of the three top winners from San Diego. What do you think about that?
They know their hops. When it comes to IPAs, I mean, come on, it's Southern California. You know, and I'm not hating on East Coast IPAs. I'm an East Coast girl, but they definitely are a little bit heavier on the malts out here, where, you know, the West Coast, it's bright, it's shiny. It's what all of us, I think, have come to count on as far as what a West Coast style IPA is. And
so I like the new Hophead Red 8%.
Yeah.
Drew, do you think that would have placed at all in the IPA blind tasting, or would have stood out as being too strong?
Way too malty, a little too hot. Which are both things that, you know, make that an epic red. And
yeah,
the one thing that I think would have really, you know, what really would have done well on was that aroma, because those Amarillos are stinky. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah.
So I always like the hot pepper. And then what's this? This is the Arrogant. Who wants to pour the Arrogant Bastard from Stone? Because cheers again. So of our IPA blind tasting panel, Stone IPA was number one. Number two was Two Roads, our buddy Phil Markowski in Connecticut. Number three was Green Flash West Coast. And that's a pretty tight category. I mean, we had Bell's, Two Hearted. You know, we had a new local brewery, Gun Hill. We had a lot of people involved in that. Lagunitas, IPA, some really great breweries.
It was funny. There was a little bit of a battle there at the end between first and second, because the Two Roads just had such a wonderful aroma. But the Stone had a stronger bitterness and a stronger flavor. But I'm kind of a hound for the aroma. So I was kind of pulling for the two hands.
But when you judged, Drew, did you actually – you had no idea of knowing which beers they were, because it was totally blind.
No clue.
Yeah.
No clue. I think the only one I was able to actually pick out just from the blind tasting was Two Hearted.
Yeah, that Two was Hearted is Centennial on Centennial.
Yeah, that was the only one I was like, I know what this one is.
Yeah. So now we're drinking the Stone Arrogant. I wish he was still on the line, because we could ask him about this. But this is the Arrogant Bastard. All right. So cheers to Stone. Cheers to Two Roads. Right. Cheers to Green Flash and everybody else that participated in the IPA blind tasting. It was pretty awesome. And we're going to do it again. I think we need to make it an annual thing, because there's so many regions. I mean, so Whitney's a writer from the Southern Living. I know you're new to beer, but you were a chef before.
Yes.
So what are some of the things that Southern Living is going to be doing with beer? You're going to have more beer columns?
Yeah, you know, we have...
Do you need our producers to be your consultants?
I would love
they're pretty
these
good.
Guys
Justin
to come
and
down and consult me in my office.
They're good writers.
I'm ripping open these packages. No, yeah, we are, you know, we just published our A to Z Guide to Southern Food right now, and B is for craft beer. And so that is why, it's just so significant right now to our region and to the food and drink culture of our region that we couldn't pass it up. We do have an artisan food column that we're going to cover beers every month. We've got a great writer on staff, Hannah Hayes. She is like a 20-something girl. Sometimes she smells like beer in the morning. But so
it happens like to the best of
yeah.
us.
and then they're not 20 somethings anymore.
Exactly. But she's really on it, and she's the one who put together that huge list for us of beers by state. So she's going to be on it, and we're definitely planning on covering a lot.
Well, talk
more
about Southern Living. We've got the new trend in craft beer, and it's not even new anymore. It's been for several years. Many, you know, the base of good, let's say, whiskey or distilled product,
right,
is can be beer.
Yep.
And even the best whiskeys in Scotland, they make a weak beer and they turn it into scotch.
Yeah.
So there's we know that our friends Hitachino in Japan and Aventinus in Germany, there's a lot of great breweries that are making a special distilled product. So Rich from New Holland is here. So New Holland is a brewery in Holland, Michigan. But they're also doing a distilled products. And maybe the Southerners will like that, too, because we also got people coming on about moonshine and things
that.
But,
no, for sure.
Rich, tell us about, like, how is it that a brewery can go from making good beer to also making a distilled spirit based on beer?
Well, for us, it was really just a natural progression. You know, the first few steps in making great spirit is making great beer. You have to, it comes from malted barley, wheat, some other grains, obviously, and then it's fermented. And we'd been doing that for almost a decade when we began distilling. So I would almost say that it was an unfair advantage when you compare us to some other startup distilleries that we had a decade of fermentation experience under our belt when we got started. And then when you move this through the distillation process, we distill differently than most distillers. You know, we love the folks in Scotland and the folks in Kentucky and around the world that are making great spirit, and we were inspired by them, but we wanted to make it our own. And part of what makes craft beer so great is the innovation. And so, you know, moving that right to the distilling side, we innovated. And we're very proud of the fact that we're first a brewery. So we don't hide that. We actually let it influence the spirits in a pretty big way. So, you know, I brought some spirits with me today. One is a bourbon that we are finishing in a beer cask. We make a beer called Dragon's Milk, and it is just a wonderful barrel-aged stout. We age that in bourbon casks, and we pull the beer out. We put whiskey right back in for finishing, and it makes a very malty and wonderful bourbon. Just finishing it for three months in that cask.
I want to have Al, let me have another taste of the Hotbed Red because it's
we won the
IPA blind tasting winner was Stone IPA. The second first on the air is we're tasting the new 8%. Green Flash Hotbed Red, which I'd love to try. And now we're going to try the whiskey. So this is my question about when you distill beer to make a spirit, do you guys just distill, like, the crappy beer, the bad beer? I mean, do you make beer, like, a light beer just to distill?
Well, there are two answers to that question. One is our general approach is to we make an unhopped beer. It's not beer that didn't work out in some other capacity. I would say 99% of what we do is simply the recipe is written to, through all the way to the end of when it comes out of that barrel or whatever we're going to be doing
to
finish it.
So you start by brewing a certain kind of beer.
Yes.
That you will distill from?
About a 10% unhopped beer is the base of our whiskeys and things.
When it doesn't have hops, it's generally called wash.
Correct.
And if it was to be a beer, about what ABV would that be?
About 10%. It usually gets to about 10%. We do get a little bit higher on some, a little bit lower on others. But the goal when we start seems to be right about 10%.
I heard that Macallan, they try not to go over about 8.5. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you have to make smaller hearts cuts when you're going up to 10?
Well, we feel that fermentation is one of those things that we pull some levers to affect the final spirit, but ABV is really a little further down the list. We also lauter, Very much like the Scots. The folks in Kentucky ferment, you know, on the grains. And again, I have to point out that I am a bourbon nerd and I drink a lot of it, so I love the guys in Kentucky. But they do it differently than we do. They ferment on the grain. They ferment really hot. They get it to about 10% in like a day and a half or 2 days. Open fermentation. We are closed fermentation. We lauter. It takes about 10 days to fully ferment. So we feel that taking that approach, we don't get all of those high alcohols that we have to worry about so much with the cuts. And when we put our whiskey in a barrel, it's not to age the bad things out of the whiskey. It's to impart those barrel flavors into the whiskey. So we don't feel that we need as much time in a barrel either. Most of our whiskeys are aged somewhere between like 3 and 4 years, and they're just beautiful whiskeys.
One thing I'll say is I love spirits as much as I love craft beer, but for a Whitney from Southern Living, I think New York has a lot going on. It's a growing craft beer town. It's a wine town. It's a cocktail town. For your Southern Living people, mm-hmm. Do you think that there is interested and independent spirits and specialty spirits as they are in craft beer? It's the same kind of thing? Or,
well, absolutely.
What do you think?
I mean, the craft beer thing, it's new, right? Part of the reason it really happened in Alabama was because a law was finally passed that people were able to brew beer above a certain alcohol percentage. Yeah, so
it was like it last year.
It was 2000. Well,
was it last?
Yeah, I don't know. It was recently. Yeah.
We got Alabama and Mississippi and homebrewing as well. So.
Yeah, as of like 2 or 3 years ago, there were still 2 states in the U.S. where it wasn't legal to make homebrew.
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
So spirits are super popular in the South. In fact, a lot of the brewers that I've talked to in the South got into beer brewing because they were actually interested in distilling. And they said the first thing we have to do is learn how to make great beer. And then we can move on.
Well, we were talking about it a little bit off air that Atlanta, I think, is one of my favorite examples in the South.
Al Sharpton.
Decatur is just such an amazing place to eat and drink. And it's all things craft. It's craft coffee. It's artisan cheese. It's whiskey. It's gin. You know, obviously a lot of beer, some food. Once that ball gets rolling, it just picks up steam, and then everything that approaches craft. And, you know, to relate it to the South, Atlanta is one of those cities that the rest of the country doesn't seem to be talking about when you talk about spirits and cocktails. You know, New York, Portland, Chicago, New Orleans, there are a lot of cities that get a lot of recognition. And Atlanta is not in that group, but it's always surprised me because I look forward to my trips to Atlanta every year, and I always limp home with a hangover. It is an amazing town.
You know, Rich, you're an interesting guy, and I want to ask a few questions. So you're the National Accounts Manager for the Spirits Division of New Holland Brewing and Distilling. So typically, what are some of the cities and regions that you visit?
Well,
and
we have.
What do you get to do when you go there? Just drink?
Well, we have people positioned throughout the country, and then I travel to go support them, continuing education, and we try to run some really big events, and I travel a lot for national events. I happen to be in New York right now just because I didn't make it last year, and so I didn't come for an event. I just came to eat and drink well for a week.
We got lucky.
Yeah, exactly. So I do a lot of those things with national events, you know, Whiskey Fest in Chicago. I was in Portland, Oregon a couple weeks ago for another whiskey festival. So I travel for a lot of these big events and try to support our team that's on the street. And when you look in from the outside, I get paid to eat and drink with really cool people. There is a lot of work that goes along with that, Excel files and phone calls and all the non-glamorous, you know, side of everything that we do. But about 10% of what I do is stand around with cool people and drink. So
do you think that more breweries will also start distilling spirits as well?
Well, I hope that that is a developing trend. I know that I've heard of a few that are. Mother Earth in North Carolina, I heard they're distilling. I'm drawing a blank on the name of that
brewery
right now, but in Indianapolis, they're beginning to distill.
The Indy 500. No.
So there are a number of
that was a bad joke. Nobody's even laughing. Because you know what happens?
Sorry, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Good job there. Really, Rich, really, really
okay, this show's going to end soon, I'll tell you why. When it's beer, people laugh. Now everybody's focused on pouring your damn spirits, and nobody's laughing. So I like beer. Beer makes people happy. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow.
Well, there is
and the
that,
spirits, like, you bringing the spirits in, man.
Well, there is that.
Messing
that really
up my
bad,
beer vibe.
I actually said this to a brewer once, and he didn't find it funny at all. But whiskey is beer once it grows up, and the brewer didn't really care for that. So I don't believe that for sure, but whiskey is great. We make and drink an awful lot of whiskey. We started a few years ago We've been distilling for about 9 years now. And we started with a lot of vodka and a lot of these things. And then we grew up and we became a whiskey and gin company. You know, we drink a lot of whiskey and gin. So it just happens that that's what we also like to make. It you know, works that way. And then with also being, you know, rooted in craft beer, we have that advantage of fermentation, all those things. But for the most part, it's innovation. We're trying new things. You know, we're finishing bourbon in a beer cask, and it's amazing. We have a white whiskey that rather than going into a barrel, we steep it with hops. And it reminds you a bit of an agave spirit. So we originally called it Hopkilo. We're in the process of changing that name now. And then the other bottle that I brought that we're obviously not going to get to is a beer schnapps that we distilled our finished Kolsch, fully hopped and everything Kolsch. And it's the only way to describe it is pretty. Like it just, it's perfumey and it's amazing. So spirits are a lot of fun, and it's not something we're just doing in our spare time.
I think from my experience, the finest spirits are from either, you know, if it's something from grape and grape must, or it's from beer and wort and what you guys are doing. So You guys are awesome. We're going to give a few shout-outs also to New York City. There's some events coming up. We've got this weekend, the Jimmy's number 43 barbecue rig will be at Gun Hill. There's so many new breweries in New York City. Gun Hill Brewing is in the Bronx will be there on Saturday. And Single Cut up in Astoria will be there on Sunday. Tomorrow night, which is Wednesday in New York City, Double Windsor, another great Good Brew Seal bar. They've got some cool things going on, including a bunch of other half and Peekskill and local breweries. And that's the big trend in New York City right now is all the local breweries that are growing up. But a big part of New York, too, is the imports, the guys from Michigan, the guys from San Diego. New York, I think, is one of the best beer towns in the world because of all the different types of beers we can get.
Double Windsor's actually doing a San Diego night tomorrow.
Yeah.
So they're going to have our brand-new seasonal Road Warrior, which is a Imperial Red Rye. It's a 8%.
I think they're doing everybody's night because they're doing New York City, New York, upstate, California, and I think they're covering all the bases.
It's just like we're having a party.
We like Double Windsor. If you're in New York, and a lot of our listeners say, where should I go in New York City? Of course, you should go to Double Windsor in Brooklyn. Check it out, one of our Good Brew Seal bars. All right. Yeah, so in closing,
I'd like to throw in a quick little shameless plug myself here that we have a whiskey dinner on Thursday at Char Number 4, and it came together a little bit late. We just, you know, met each other and really wanted to work together on this trip, so we put it together. Still a couple seats left for that, so if you want to come join us at Char Number 4 on Thursday, amazing food and lots of whiskey.
And then, Whitney, you're Southern Living. What are you doing in New York this week?
Oh, I'm here. Well, I came here to sit and drink beer with you, and then I am also doing some fun cooking demos. I cook as well for some great stuff to do on Memorial Day.
Where?
I'm going to the Food and Wine Kitchens, which is one of our sister publications, to tape some shows.
So, all right.
Yeah, it should be fun.
Well, New York's a great place. Allie, anything else? Green Flash?
I'm going to be at Idle Hands tomorrow night. We're actually doing a West Coast, it's going to be all Green Flash beers with In-N-Out style food. So we're going to be recreating the animal burger and all that good stuff. I know Rev's been selling tickets online, so I think it is a little bit limited, but it's going to be, I think, 6 to 9 tomorrow.
Hey, Jimmy, I'd love to plug New York City Homebrewers Guild. We have the annual Mead meeting tonight, which is just a terror show.
If you're listening live, otherwise you'll miss it. Burp Castle, East 7th Street.
First Tuesday every month, and it's a good time.
Do you know that on East 7th Street near 2nd Avenue, there's the Brewmeter Triangle? It was founded in the 80s. It's where Garrett Oliver first started brewing. There's Burp Castle, now formerly Brewski's Standings and Jimmy's number 43. So it's the home of New York City Homebrewers Guild for 30 years. All right. Rock on, guys. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com who have re-upped for a fifth year. Thank you, GreatBrewers.com, for sponsoring HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And whatever it is, I'm getting wasted on crazy bourbon from New Holland. All right.
Beer barrel bourbon's
thanks to Mike, Drew, Allie, Rich, Whitney, and Mitch for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden and Justin Kennedy, and our engineer, Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.